Hey, cheers. I don't know what episode we're on, bro, but like,
I don't know either.
We've been doing this. We're fucking in it.
We've been doing this. Yeah.
Hey, so how's it going?
Yeah, I'm good, actually.
Pretty good, yeah. Right?
Now that I think about it.
It's been a good week,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm Karina.
I'm Clark.
And welcome to It's Always Spooky.
Yep.
I am Titanium.
It's always spooky.
So, this week's movie, I don't even really know how to introduce this one because it's primarily comedy, it feels like.
It is definitely. It was intended to be a horror movie. It's by Blumhouse Productions.
Yeah.
It was a definitely like a blockbuster horror movie of the year. But if they went with a PG-13 rating, because this is 2022's Megan.
I also just realized this ties into our last episode, unexpectedly, because Blumhouse Productions started with Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Weird. Mm-hmm. Why do we keep having these happen?
It's like we're psychic or something. I mean, it's because we're not doing it on purpose.
No.
Like, we're true. We're truly like, we even, like, this is out of sequence, too. We were supposed to record Megan a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. right? Like, so it's just, this is just fate, bro.
Yeah.
Like, this is just it.
Cool shit just keeps happening because this is supposed to happen.
This is supposed to happen. This is destiny.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was a really good film. I have to say that, I have to give a shout out to Horror History with CZ. I don't know if you've ever watched CZ's World, but he kept calling this movie M3gan, and I can't unhear it now.
M3gan. I love it.
So yeah, this is a great Blumhouse movie, 2022. So it's directed by Gerard Johnstone, but written by James Wan and Akilah Cooper. I think it's either Akilah or Akella. Mm-hmm. But Akilah Cooper also wrote the screenplay.
Oh, sick.
So
I do also want to point out that one of the executive producers is Allison Williams, who plays Gemma.
I didn't fucking know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's really fucking cool.
Also of Get Out fame.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was going to bring that up. So some of the stars in this movie are Allison Williams. We know her from Get Out. She plays Aunt Gemma. We got Violet McGraw. I know Violet from Haunting of Hill House. She's been in a lot of like Mike Flanagan films. She plays Katie. I also put Ronnie Chang on here. Ronnie Chang's a comedian, but he's been on like Late Night with Trevor Noah. But anyways, Ronnie Chang plays David, the boss. And then I wanted to shout out Jenna Davis does the voice of Megan. Mm-hmm. And then Amy McDonald plays Megan, like the actual robot.
What's so funny too is I was hoping that you would bring that up because mm-hmm. while we were watching it last night, Nick said, "Oh, did you know two people played that role?"
Oh,
and I responded with, "No."
Yeah,
and he said, "Yeah, this one 8-year-old girl learned the choreography of what an 8-year-old would do,
mm-hmm.
and then that's what they like modeled Megan after, and mm-hmm. then they picked somebody else for the voice."
Yep.
And
the voice was like slightly more mature than you know. Than Amy McDonald because she's an actual child.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And she, I have some trivia about Amy later about some of her training because she actually did all of the stunts and all of the choreography herself.
Sick.
They had very minimal like CGI effects that were put on Megan. Most of it was Amy's ability.
Nice.
And I think the only thing that they CG'd was her face. Right?
Oh, like, wow. Yeah.
The entire time that Amy played Megan, she just wore like a prosthetic mask. And so they just animated everything on her face in post.
Sick.
Which, yeah, I guess she had a lot of fun playing that.
I would assume so. It's a fun movie. Megan herself is, you know, a little scary, a little...
wrong with like AI tech.
Exactly. Yeah. Anything where technology is taken too far is mm-hmm. just a mm-hmm. little real. And that makes it a little frightening, even if the movie itself isn't frightening. But I could see having a lot of fun playing this cunty doll that is equal parts nurturing and compassionate and fun and also horrifying.
But also, yeah, horrifying and like catty and sassy.
Yeah.
Like she has attitude in this movie.
She does.
Like from the beginning, from the get-go. And we're going to get into that.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I'm going to have to look up the tagline. But the title card was really fun. I really liked it because it's kind of like... You know, the power on kind of like circle that lights up.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. It's kind of like the power on, and then Megan kind of shows up in that reflection. So I liked that as like a good title card.
I remember it actually being kind of funny.
It's friendship has evolved.
Yeah.
And then she's more than a toy. She's family.
I cannot wait for the second one of these. It's going to be so good.
Oh my God. I fucking know. We could go watch it in the theaters. It comes out in June.
We should.
The end of June. Because I bet you it'll be like a fucking awesome movie. Yeah, and we did everything else. We did all the other metadata besides like maybe budget.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do that now too, and then we can go back to our scariest scenes. Budget was $12 million. Opening weekend in US and Canada on January 6th of 2023. Just made me laugh. Was $30 million. So it damn near doubled its budget in the first opening weekend. Gross $95 million. US and Canada, and then $180 million worldwide.
Nice.
Jesus, that's probably why like less than a month later they were like slated for a sequel.
Yeah.
I'm actually excited. We're going to talk about like the sequel at the end, cuz I kind of want to talk about it. I've watched a couple of trailers for it.
Yeah.
And I know the plot for
I know nothing about it other than that one little advertisement.
Yeah, the like teaser. Yeah. That's the only trailer that's come out. But I've looked up, I just looked up like some of the production notes
are on
like IMDb and stuff.
Sick. That's exciting.
Do you want to do our recap?
Yeah, I think I actually wrote one. So for a brief spoiler-free synopsis, following the death of her parents, Katie is placed under the guardianship of her aunt, robotics engineer Gemma. In an effort to provide Katie with companionship while she works through her grief, Gemma creates the perfect friend, hyper-realistic robotic AI Megan. But we all know where this is headed.
Yeah, no fucking shit. I just love the idea of like having protocols for an AI and then not realizing that like if you give a supercomputer a bunch of rules so that, you know, you're being safe and you're having like safeguards, the first thing that AI is going to do is find out ways to like circumvent that and turn that shit off.
Yeah. I also try to frame my perspective of AI the same way that I frame my perspective of, say, nuclear warheads, where I'm like, if you have to create these rules in order to make sure that this isn't used in nefarious ways, maybe just don't create it.
That's absolutely fucking true.
Yeah.
No, that is like dead ass. Like, come on now.
Take my advice, pal. Quit while you're ahead.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Maybe we don't have to
just
do it.
Just don't fucking do it. How about that?
Yeah.
If you're having to put a bunch, you're having to bend over backwards and really think about like all of these different ways. Like, it could go wrong this way and it could go wrong that way. It's like, okay, well, maybe that's the sign. That's the sign that like this isn't for us. This is out of our wheelhouse. Some things are better left just on fucking paper and not actually made.
Yeah, maybe we're engineering too close to the sun and we just need to come back down just for a little bit.
Start taking care of our own planet.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, maybe we still need to be doing the work instead of having robots do it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And I love the whole kind of point of this movie and kind of the way that they frame this very much. Like, it's, to me, it's more comedy than horror. I see what they were trying to do with trying to make it embody both. But for me, the only real horror is how far they kind of push this idea of like parenting through your iPad.
Yeah.
Right. This like this idea of like trying to just replace parenthood completely, as well as having a titanium coated supercomputer that doesn't necessarily want to do what you tell it to.
Yeah. You know, Nick has said on multiple occasions that if he were to have had an iPad as a kid, he absolutely would have been an iPad kid.
Oh my God.
Because he's an iPad kid now.
Yeah, all of us. Like, yeah. It's so easy to distract children with iPads.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
any type of bright screen in their face, like, that's not like a child's problem. Like,
no.
Because they have some addiction. They have the addiction because you gave them the thing.
It's dopamine. Yes. Going and going and going.
Constantly.
And I was a computer kid and
I was too.
Mine wasn't portable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I spent all fucking day with my eyes glued to that screen.
Mm-hmm.
So
I spent a lot of time outside because we had like a home computer when I was growing up. But like, again, like I spend a good portion of my life today in front of a screen.
Yeah.
Playing video games and stuff like that. So it's And it always really, really pains me when I go out to like restaurants and you see like parents come and they sit down and they sit their children down. And the first thing they do is they pull the iPads out of their wallets, out of their purses, and they just hand them to them. And then they get on their phones.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, where is the connection happening? Yeah. I understand. Like, I get it. I'm not a parent. So like, I'm not like not throwing shade or anything like that. But it's one of those things where you're like, okay, well then what the fuck are you even, you could do that at home. Like, why are you even coming out? What's even the point?
Yeah, because I do feel that we had a balance. As much as my face was in that screen a lot, I also spent a lot of time outside and maybe, you know, shooting hoops or whatever. But also I would go for like days in the forest with my dad and that sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
So I had a lot of unplugged time. And I think one of the things that this movie is trying to highlight is that unplugged time is greatly reduced now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we don't really want to connect with other people.
Yeah.
It, just in general, like not just like connecting with your children and building meaningful connections with your children, but like interacting with your neighbors.
Yeah.
Interacting with your coworkers.
Yeah.
Right. In a very
all
much
of that is highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that part. Yeah. The relationships that both of the main characters have with the people around them is so surface.
Yeah. And it's very much, it can almost be seen as very like selfish.
Yeah.
It's for kind of purely selfish reasons.
Yeah.
But, that kind of leads into our themes. So let's talk about some themes that we've got here. So I wrote down loss, detachment, and addiction and reliance on technology.
Yeah. Mine kind of aligned with that. First one was grief. Second one was the age of AI.
Yeah.
And because we are in it. We're in the beginning stages of it, but we're in it. And the last one that I wrote down might be a little controversial. Some people might agree, some people might not. But honestly, low-key feminism. This movie does have a bit of that. The main characters are all female. The supportive friend and everything that Gemma created for Katie is a little girl, which could just be because she's also a little girl.
Yeah.
But the therapist is a woman. One of Gemma's coworkers is a woman. Mm-hmm. There's only like two men that are really even in it.
Right. And it's David, the asshole boss, and Kurt, his assistant. And then Gemma's other coworker.
Oh, and then Gemma's other coworker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like even her neighbor is a woman.
Is a woman. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's good. That's a good point. That's something I definitely didn't pick up on.
Yeah.
And it definitely shows like Gemma in this very like STEM.
Yep.
Like role. Highly intelligent, very ambitious. And like, even though she's a terrible role model and has terrible maternal instincts, at the same time, like her work is kind of like her legacy, like what she's leaving behind.
Yeah.
And what she really, really cares about. And I like how initially she, you can tell like she really, she doesn't know how to be like an aunt, let alone a mom.
Yeah.
Right. Which I just found really interesting and just couldn't connect with Katie. Didn't have any like toys or anything to give her or to entertain her when she first came to her house. But then later on, there is a moment where they do have a moment with like Bruce in the workshop or in the garage or whatever.
Yeah.
Where you do see some like, okay, she can form connections. She does know how to like talk to Katie and like build rapport and relationship with her. She just chooses not to. She chooses to kind of focus on other things initially. I can't stop thinking about that quote of just like, we'll find balance later. Right now, Katie needs to spend as much time with Megan as possible.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
I do love, too, having a character who is placed into that role because, you know, getting into spoiler territory, of course.
Well, yeah, we already gave our recap.
Yeah, so. So now it's on you. But getting essentially shoved into the role of being a guardian and to have a female character be playing that role and not have maternal instincts. I love that because it's so often that women are pigeonholed into certain stereotypes or certain roles.
Yes.
And this is one of the few examples where all of those stereotypes are broken. Like she is a successful woman in STEM and she is trying to impart a little bit of that curiosity and that drive to want these things to keep developing and keep expanding into bigger things into the kid that she, in a really unfortunate way, had to take care of.
Yeah, I find that so interesting. I'm glad that you brought it up, because I didn't initially see that as like her lack of maternal instincts being kind of like a subversion of typical tropes of women. But I really do appreciate that now, because you know, she was given the option to take custody. She could have told them at that moment, like, I'm not equipped to handle this. I got a lot on my plate.
Yeah,
I would love to be there to support her, but like, I can't take care of her. But she did it purely out of obligation, because mm-hmm. she promised her sister, I will take care of Katie if anything happens to you. Like, her sister made her promise that.
Well, and the other option, it was either Seattle or yes. Jacksonville, Florida. And she was like, she's not going to Florida.
Yeah. And yeah. had met like the husband's parents once and was like, they're kind of weird. I don't think she would like it there, or just probably didn't want her to go, just like you were saying. Just be yeah. like, oh, yeah. that's a decision to make.
Yeah. Cause like, I was going to say no offense, Florida, but full offense, Florida.
Full offense.
You deserve it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's an entire category of human labeled Florida man. For a reason.
For him. You just type in Florida man and then any date.
Yeah.
And you'll find something. Trust me. You'll find something interesting.
It's the home of people smoking bath salts and eating faces.
Mm.
Love it.
Love it. Speaking of eating faces, what was your favorite scene?
Because
I don't think anyone's face got eaten in this, but close enough.
So for my favorite scene, I do have an honorable mention.
Okay.
The honorable mention is Megan reading Alice in Wonderland to Katie was so fucking funny, because you get used to this like childlike, also still a little bit robotic voice that's coming from her, that's very obviously a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's reading this story.
She wore Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, reading Alice in Wonderland to Katie. And it's the part of a male in the story. And just this like old man voice comes at her while she's reading. Just killed me.
Yeah. I think
cracked
he was
me up.
I think she was reading Tweedledee.
Yeah.
So she was doing this really deep voice like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Mom was like, that's what we need for audiobook narrators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A Megan. An
yeah.
M. Thregan.
An M. Thregan. And then for my actual favorite scene, let me set the scene a little bit.
Yeah, you gotta describe it.
So they're about to hard launch Megan to the world mm-hmm. and say that this is essentially the pinnacle of a child companion. They provide friendship, they provide a toy and entertainment and all of these things. And so they're about to hard launch this to the world in the form of this event where they have a bunch of people coming out and they're going to do a demonstration mm-hmm. of Megan.
Mm-hmm.
So while that is all going on, in the background, tension is at an all-time high because Megan has gone rogue. The AI has decided there are no more rules. She is the super user. She is deciding how this moves from this point forward.
Sure.
And she has gotten violent. So Megan is in a hallway with David,
mm-hmm.
who is the CEO of the company that Gemma works for. And Megan has decided David needs to die. So when she sees him, rather than just, you know, like chase after him and kill him, she starts doing this cunty little dance.
This little like TikTok dance.
This little TikTok dance mm-hmm. that Katie had taught her. And just the contrast of the brutal killing that's happening with just this like cunty little dance where it's like, oh, I've got time. It's going to be okay.
It was like purely a distraction too, to like get closer to the murder weapon that she needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then she gets my favorite murder weapon in the whole movie.
Yep.
But that scene of her just like dancing before she's going to kill him cracked me up. The first time I watched this movie, I was crying. I was laughing so hard. And it carries over into the advertisement for Megan 2.
Yes.
Well, Megan 2.0 that's coming out, which the advertisement for that features Feminine Nomenon by Chapel Roan.
And it is
such a good one.
Oh,
love it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
No, my favorite part about that scene besides like the TikTok dance, is she grabs the blade. It's like a paper cutter, and she just grabs the blade off of it, and she shings it down, right? And David goes, "Oh shit." And he runs off. He like runs one direction. And then so she's like slowly coming like Michael Myers down the hallway. And he runs one direction and then he runs the other direction. Like, and everyone's like, "Fuck, I can't." And he's running down the hallway and he sees his assistant Kurt in the elevator. He's like, "Hold the elevator, Kurt, hold the elevator." And Kurt's like pushing the closed elevator button.
Yeah. Oh my God. That was like the pinnacle of just dumb shit entertainment.
Oh.
It was so good.
Could you imagine watching that in the theater? Like rolling with laughter.
Yeah. Just the whole crowd.
Ronnie Chang is so fucking good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was one of my favorite scenes. So I'm glad you brought that up. It was
sick.
It wasn't my favorite scene, but it was like pretty close second. I wanted to see if there's any other honorable mentions. There's a lot of really good scenes in this, but I feel like for me, I always like the ones that make me like laugh out loud or make me surprised. And so the one that I chose is another death. It's when Brandon dies, the little shitty like 11-year-old at the like alternative school camp thing that they were doing.
Yeah, that little shit fuck.
Yeah. So we'll set the scene there. Gemma wants Katie to go back to school because she was being homeschooled by her parents, but now that they're dead, Gemma can't homeschool her. So she wants her to go to this alternative school it's meant for kids that think outside the box, I think is what Gemma said.
I think, yeah, it's supposed to be, I think it almost kind of comes across as like an alternative school, not in the sense of like these kids need help to get to the next level. It's more like we're going to teach these kids to be in like STEM sort of situation.
Yeah, yeah. Or like, instead of just learning like reading, writing, and arithmetic, it's like, oh, we're going to go outside and we're going to learn like gardening and farming as well as like, you know, your regular, you know, basic like basic skills that you need.
Yeah.
And so initially, Katie wants to bring Megan and Gemma tells her like, absolutely not. She's a prototype. We can't really have her out in public. And Gemma initially like she gets convinced to stay and help chaperone this event, and so she just puts Megan on the toy table, tells Katie like she can't leave, you can't tell anybody that she's not a toy, she needs to just hang out there. And for the activity for the day is they're collecting chestnuts. Mm-hmm. And chestnuts, if you don't know, before you roast them over an open fire, they're covered in like a green flesh, like a pretty thick green flesh, and it has like spines all over it that mm-hmm. are really sharp. And Katie, all the kids get paired off. And they get little buckets and they're going out to go pick these chestnuts. And Brandon is an asshole. And you know this kind of from the beginning. There's another boy who doesn't want to get paired with Brandon. He immediately like says something when the teacher pairs him off. And says like, "I don't want to be paired with Brandon." And the teacher's like, "Oh, okay, that's fine. Like you can be paired with Joey and like Brandon will go with Katie." And then there's another moment that's a pretty funny moment when Gemma's talking to Brandon's mom. And she says something like, "Brandon, honey, like, are you too cold? Do you need a sweater?" And he turns around. He's like, "Fuck off, Holly."
Yep.
She's like, you could just say no, thank you. And looks back at Gemma. Just like, kids, you know, you never know what they're going to say next. Gemma's like, "Yeah, it's a really weird age." And anyways, Katie picks up a chestnut. Brandon, he picks it up and he offers to give it to Katie and he like mashes it into her hand, causing her pain. And she cries out and Megan shows up, just like was probably keyed up the whole time, was probably watching them.
Oh, yeah.
And Brandon notices Megan, goes like, "Hey, who is that?" And Katie's like, "Oh, it's my doll. Like she's paired with me. She won't play with anybody else." And so Brandon just like picks her up, just picks Megan up and just runs off. And Katie tries to find them for a minute, but can't. And Brandon like takes Megan and throws her on the ground. And I think he like takes one of her shoes off. One of her shoes off and looks at it and tosses it. And then he gets on top of her. He like sits on top of her in like a very kind of predatory stance. And he smacks her across the face and he tells her something like, "What, you're not going to play with me?" And he goes to grab her hair and she turns on, wakes up. She's probably been awake the whole time. She grabs his hand and then and takes her other hand and grabs his ear.
Yeah.
And tells him, like, I think she says something like, do you know what happens to bad boys, Brandon? They grow up to be bad men.
Yep.
And then she slowly tears his ear off.
I just pulled up the quote because I thought it was really iconic.
It's real, real good. Yeah. She completely rips his ear off. And then he, you know, obviously backs up away from her. And she kind of gets up in this very, like, you know, robotic but also like acrobatic way, kind of like a backbend, like up into position. And she looks at, this is my favorite line in the movie, when she looks at him and she's like, this is the part where you should run.
Yeah.
And he starts running, and she waits for a second. She does this super beautiful thing. I just love it. It's like Amy McDonald definitely did this, mm-hmm. where right before she gets into the all fours and starts running after him, she does like a little, like, you know, like gymnasts when they go to do like a series of like vaults and backflips. She does that little start. Like that little, and she gets on all fours and just starts running after him. Just like a little, like.
She's like, okay, and Pharaoh. Yeah.
And when Brandon turns around, he's like, oh my God. He's like, what the fuck? Right.
And then she chases him right into fucking traffic.
Right into an oncoming truck. That just fucking. I guess there's an unrated version of this movie.
Ooh.
I watched all of the scenes because I didn't know that, but I was curious. And in the unrated version, in the rated version, they just have his face and the car, and that's it. Like, when the impact happens, there's nothing else after. But in the unrated version, you see that impact, and then you watch the car keep moving, and just Brandon doesn't even come out from underneath it. So he must have gotten dragged the entirety of that time until the car stops, which is like not even a couple feet that way. And so just that extra couple of seconds just gives you that, like,
the road rash.
That's a closed casket funeral, in case you're wondering.
Oh yes.
Oh, such a good scene from start to finish. And you just, like, you kind of know what you're getting into. But I had to appreciate, oh God, I totally missed it too, when Megan stands up Right before she says that iconic line, she looks at the ear that she just tears off, and she just, like, throws it, and the little, like, the little sound that it makes when she throws it.
Also,
got me so good.
The way that that ear, like, comically stretches like taffy. Like, it goes so far.
Not, it would not do that in real life, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah, she took a normal ear and made it into a Dobby ear.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And then when she ripped it off, like, a good chunk of, when she tossed it, like, it was a good chunk of flesh, but, like, he still had a good portion of his ear.
Yeah.
Right, where she just took off, like, just this, like, top part of it. But anyways, that was my favorite. Oh, I this isn't in Scariest. This is in Fave. So I think this is an honorable mention, but I wrote down Katie and Gemma school talk. So it's when Gemma's talking to Katie about going to this alternative school.
Mm-hmm.
Right beforehand, I think Katie says something like, I don't want to go to school. I'm learning more with Megan. Like, we're already on fourth grade math, right? And Gemma's like, well, that's not the point. Like, you need social skills. You need all of these other things. And Megan goes into one of her spiels about, like, you know, it's not, you shouldn't do this because of this reason. And Gemma says, oh, really? And she, like, turns the volume down on Megan. And what I like is right after that point, she turns the volume down on Megan. And she goes to talk to Katie. And initially, it's as if Megan is still talking, like she's still going through her animation, but she stops doing that very quickly. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, Gemma turned her down thinking that she would just go through her speech and then just become, like, idle.
Yeah.
But almost immediately, Megan just caught on and just sat there and just listened.
Yeah.
Like, she caught on immediately. It was just like, all right, she's fucking ignoring me. I'm just not going to.
Which is so unsettling.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I love all of those little moments that Megan gives you, where, like, she's paying attention. She's changing things around.
Mm-hmm.
She's influencing Elsie.
Yeah.
The fucking AI in the house.
Who is so cute. So cute.
So cute.
I love,
but, like,
Elsie.
I, oh man, I clocked that from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, the first time that Gemma comes home and, like, Elsie doesn't say anything, I'm like, dude, all that shit's on the cloud. Like, are you kidding me right now?
Yep.
She's making backups of herself. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if she did it in your light bulbs, in your fucking bidet, in your toilet.
Yeah, because it's like, she comes home once and Elsie says, like, nothing when Elsie normally gives her a rundown of like notifications and that sort of stuff.
Right.
And then she comes home another time and Elsie says, how are you? Or something like that. And Gemma like, says, you're not programmed to ask me how I am.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, bro. Like, that's what I really like about this movie.
Yeah.
So that's what I appreciated. That's why I had it as an honorable mention, is just noticing all of these little micro moments where Megan is, she's listening. She's aware. She's active.
Yeah.
And when she's not getting the response that she wants, she's recalibrating. Shall we get into our scariest scenes?
Yeah.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. So these two are honestly pretty. No, this one's my honorable mention. So my honorable mention for scariest scene is when the therapist is talking to Katie the second time and they're going over Katie's drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And the therapist is looking at each drawing and she's looking at Katie and she's looking at the drawings. And finally she says, Katie, could you tell me like what you were thinking when you drew these? And Katie's just quiet. She says, okay, maybe you're not thinking about anything. Could you tell me how you were feeling? Like maybe you're feeling sad or angry. And again, nothing. But Katie like has a single tear that just comes down her face. And the therapist doesn't really think anything about it until Megan just fucking appears right next to her with a box of tissues. And she just says, you made her cry. And the therapist is like, oh my God. And just like grabs a tissue and just goes, I didn't intend for that to happen. And Megan goes, and yet it did.
I love that you mentioned that one because I had that in my quotes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and yet you did.
Yeah.
And then she just slowly like takes the tissue and like hands it to Katie, right? And then they have that conversation with Gemma. So that was my honorable mention. My favorite scene was, I'm trying to remember where this was in the movie. I just had written it down in here. But it's when Gemma tells Megan, it's one of the times that it's just the two of them. And she tells Megan to turn off. And Megan just replies with, are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Just that fucking moment of like, are you sure? Yeah. I just loved that moment. I think it was, I want to say it was when Megan was confronting Gemma about like their like start. Because
mm-hmm.
the thing that you don't know until kind of that halfway point is that Gemma spent all of her time creating Megan's operating system. And so they would spend like every night up until 4 a.m. talking about all of these different subjects. And she says, oh my God, I thought we were friends. You know what I mean? So like they have a rapport, like a long-standing rapport. And so after Gemma turned Megan on purely for the point of like, you are now this robot, that you're now this android for this child. And now we're making you this prototype for this new thing that we're going to sell and make a lot of money. And Megan, who is though an android and a computer, has memory and fucking remembers, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, and so it's super interesting to see like that android then using those memories against her,
mm-hmm.
being like, well, wait a second. I thought we were fucking friends. Like, you're just going to tell me to like shut off because I'm not doing your bidding anymore to your liking.
Yeah.
I just really liked that kind of like flip.
Yeah. Cause it adds in a few things. It's the artificial intelligence piece of it and a machine learning piece of it where it is adapting as it's going and it's taking even, you know, core memories that kind of developed the operating system, taking those memories and applying them to what's currently happening.
Right.
But then there's also just like a level of sentience that's slowly bleeding its way in. And that's that moment where you're like, especially where she says, are you sure?
Yeah.
That's, oh shit, that's sentient.
Mm-hmm.
That thing is, that's thing, alive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That thing is no longer thinking about the person with the controller is giving me an input. I need to listen to that input. It's like making its own decisions. It's a threat.
It is a threat.
It's a very, very like clear threat.
Yeah.
And I like to, there's another moment where right before she kills Celia,
mm-hmm.
When Celia says, what are you? And Megan says, I've been asking myself that same question. And you have to admit that like a lot of AI probably do that at some point. I figured during trivia, we talk about like little Sophia a little bit and like maybe like ChatGPT.
Yeah.
Until then, I kind of want to know about your scariest scene.
So I have one honorable mention, and that is the ear stretch. Mm-hmm. Because that is, I believe at least, either that scene or the one that is my scariest is the first time that you see a little bit of Megan being a weapon as well as being a companion.
Right.
You see the more aggressive side that she can exhibit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so that was my honorable mention. My scariest scene is there is a moment where Katie is playing outside, and I believe Megan is inside.
Yes.
And Katie's playing with her bow and arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And she shoots, or she has shot one of the arrows and can't find it. And she finds the other one. And then she says, Megan, do you see my arrow? And Megan starts scanning around looking for it. Mm-hmm. And she sees it just on the other side of the fence. She can see it through a hole that Gemma and her neighbor had been like fighting about, like who needs to
fix
the hole. Exactly. And the neighbor needs to keep her dog on her side of the fence and all that kind of stuff.
As if it would fucking matter.
Yeah, as if it would matter.
The first time the dog doesn't run through the hole, it runs around the fence and attacks their car.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't fucking matter if she fixes the hole or not.
No.
Your dog's aggressive and you need to like keep him on a leash.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. So
I would literally smack the absolute shit out of that woman. I love dogs. Like, don't blame that dog one iota.
Well,
I blame fucking Celia. Like, what the fuck?
Well, one part of loving dogs is understanding the way that they behave and understanding what sort of competence an owner needs to have to be able to take care of that.
1,000%.
And it doesn't minimize at all the love for dogs. If anything, it's a commentary on the annoyance of humans.
Yes. 1,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah, because let's be honest, every single time you've ever seen somebody who like goes to dog training, the dog trainer's like, we're not here to train dogs, people. We're here to train the people.
Absolutely.
The dogs are just here as an accessory.
Yep.
The dogs are not the problem, trust me.
They are not. So when Megan recognizes that the arrow is on the other side of the fence, mm-hmm. she goes outside to go retrieve it, mm-hmm. and she goes to grab it. When she grabs the arrow, the dog from the neighbor's yard attacks Megan's arm.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's trying to pull it back.
Katie is.
Yeah.
Because Katie comes, right? Like,
yeah. Well, Megan's trying to like get the arrow out, but Katie's trying to help by like pulling Megan back out of the hole.
Right.
And in the scuffle that happens there, the dog ends up biting onto Katie.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, you know, a dog attack situation happens. When Katie screams, Gemma finally hears what's going on, runs outside.
Because that's the backup to that, is that Gemma didn't fucking hear when Katie was screaming for her.
No.
Right? When like Megan, because Megan got bit on the arm and then he grabbed onto the back of her neck. I was thinking to myself, like, if that was Katie that had stuck her head through there, she'd be fucking dead.
Like, also, I'm glad that you brought up that Gemma wasn't hearing when Katie was calling for her.
Exactly.
She wasn't hearing that, but she heard when Katie screamed.
Exactly.
And that's, I think, the first little iota that you get of the maternal instinct kind of turning on with Gemma.
Yes. Oh,
That's when you can tell that she's like, oh, shit. She gets into parent mode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up. But then Katie screams, Gemma comes outside. Gemma and the neighbor, of course, get in a fight about the dog, that sort of situation. Gemma takes Katie inside. And after she's leaving the situation and walking up the walkway to go into the door, Megan just looks at the neighbor and her hair is all disheveled. She has like a piece of grass or a leaf in it or something like that. And just the look that she gives that neighbor made it my scariest scene, because that is the moment that you're like, oh, fuck, that thing means business.
That thing's plotting your death right there. If looks could kill, you'd literally just, like, burst into flames just right on the fucking spot.
That is I feel like that was the moment where I saw terror in this movie. Like, oh, shit, no, Megan is terror Yeah.
1,000%. No, I'm glad you brought that up. I think the only other thing I'll piggyback off of that is, I'm going to bring it up. It's from Horror History, I'm pretty sure. When that scene first happens and Gemma comes outside and her and Celia are arguing back and forth, she's like, I fucking told you to keep your dog on your side of the fence. And Celia's like, he was on my side of the fence. Maybe you should tell those girls to stay on your side of the fence. She doesn't even know that Megan is a toy. And CZ brought it up very well that, like, it kind of makes sense because, like, both the elderly and young people are the most common to be scammed.
Yeah.
Because they don't understand technology as much. And that's even, like, something that Celia then brings up later when Dewey, her dog, goes missing and the police come by. And Celia says, like, why didn't you ask that other girl that's in there that always just sits in the window till 3 o'clock in the morning, like, staring at us?
Yeah.
And, like, Gemma's like, yeah, that's a doll. That's not a person.
Yeah. I'm glad that you bring that up because that is one of those little spiced on details that really is pulling the atmosphere into it, where you get the, oh yeah, it's the old person who doesn't understand technology brought into that whole scene.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's brought in even further when, like, Dewey gets got by Megan that evening, that Katie like goes to the doctor, gets antibiotics, they come back, and then Megan, like, tucks Katie in and she gets to business. She gets up, she goes, and you initially see the dog and he's sleeping, and then he hears his owner, Dewey boy, but you can hear it. It's garbled, it's robotic, it has some, like, inconsistencies in it. But Dewey's a dog, he doesn't know any different. It sounds like his owner, so he gets up and he walks over, and then Megan entices him with treats that she has in her hand, and as soon as he gets close enough, she just fucking grabs him and kills him. And then further on, I'm just tying this back into when she lures Celia into the shed.
Yeah.
She's gonna kill her, right? I think it's like the following day, because Dewey goes missing and the police come by. And then that night, a Megan goes over to Celia's house and lures her into her shed by pretending to be Dewey, the dog. And again, you can hear it. It's like slightly robotic, but it's just convincing enough that Celia goes out and at least investigates it.
She'd done been scammed.
Right? I felt like there was something else I was going to bring up about that scene. Oh, I just thought this was cool. I just thought this was a kind of funny tidbit. When Megan comes out and Celia goes, what are you? And Megan says, I've been asking myself that same question. And Celia says, where's my dog? Like, what'd you do to Dewey? And she just says, he's buried 35 miles southwest and approximately 5 feet deep. Cold.
Yeah.
And the way she kills her is actually pretty good. We should talk about it.
It was decent.
It was a pretty good kill. In the unrated version, it's a lot spicier.
Oh, I bet.
She kills her with a pressure washer. So she uses a pressure washer to disarm her and disable her, to make her land on the ground. And then when she goes to put her hand on something, Megan grabs a nail gun and, like, pins her hand right there. And then walks right up to Celia, pumps the pressure gun full of the chemicals that she was spraying all over hers and Gemma's driveway earlier, and just blasts her in the face with it until she dies.
Yeah.
And in the unrated version, it holds on her face for quite a while.
Oh, hell yeah.
So that's just kind of the difference there.
I have to look up the term for something.
Well, then I'll tell you my favorite quote in this movie. I said it before we started recording, but I have to say it now. It was said by David to Gemma, Cole, and Tess. It says, remember this moment. This is the moment when we kicked Hasbro right in the dick.
Yeah. That was in my list of favorites. The only one that we haven't mentioned so far as a favorite quote was at one point, Gemma is trying to kind of take the parental role away from Megan and bring it back to herself for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie says something like, you can't tell me what to do. And then Gemma says, yes, I can. That's the definition of what a guardian is.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then there's that moment where Katie goes, all right, well, fuck you. And she gets up and she tries to leave. And Gemma grabs her and she starts to panic and have, like, a little bit of, like, a tantrum, and Gemma doesn't let go of her. She's like, hold on, Katie, calm down. Like, stop it. Calm down. And Megan just goes, let her go. And she says it with enough force that the lights in the house start to flicker.
Mm-hmm.
And Gemma turns around and is just like, don't you ever do that again. Don't you ever interfere with my, like, parenting again.
Yeah.
And I think in that moment, Megan's response is, okay, Gemma, recalibrating response model. But, yeah, like, you can tell she didn't take that. Like, she heard that, like, I don't know. I'm only thinking in my brain because there's another moment towards the end of the film when Megan and Gemma are arguing. And Gemma tries to, like, trick her with the pen trick again.
Yeah.
And Megan grabs her arm and she's like, you know what, Gemma, you're exhausting, right? And at one point she says something like, I was willing to cut you some slack. You're an intelligent woman who just wants to focus on her career. I will take care of Katie. Like, I will take care of our child. Like, she says it. She says it like that. Yeah. And it's just like a, you know, just like, oh God. I mean, she gave her the role though.
She did.
Right. Like she was her primary function, was to be Katie's complete caregiver.
Yep.
And to keep her from any physical or psychological harm, even if that psychological harm could do her good, like in therapy, for example.
Yep.
Right? Like, and I like how Gemma tells her at one point when Katie's having this, like, addiction moment, and she's like, I just need to see her for 10 minutes. Like, please. Like, I need her in my life. She's the only thing that makes me happy. And Gemma's like, you're supposed to be sad. Like, the worst thing that could ever happen in life has happened to you, and that you need to be sad about that. And I think that that's a really powerful moment in the movie, and that is something to be highlighted, is that, like, going through emotion doesn't mean your life is bad.
Yeah.
And you need to go through those emotions in order to come out better out the other side.
Yeah.
If you just mask every single emotion with dopamine or alcohol or drugs or any of the above, you're just going to kill yourself.
Yeah.
You're never going to be able to, like, reach that next level of potential.
Yeah. And that's one of the only scenes in the movie where the therapist is even honestly like a competent therapist.
Yeah.
Because she talks to Gemma about, she's like, have you heard of attachment theory?
Mm-hmm.
And lays out that what's going on between Katie and Megan is that Katie has essentially displaced the attachment that she had with her parents onto Megan.
Yes.
And so as much as it's the technology addiction, it's the dopamine, it's the fact that this is the iPad for the iPad kid at this point.
Yes.
It's also that's her parents.
It's her parent.
Yeah.
And she's a child, so she can't differentiate. She can't tell the difference between Megan being a living, breathing person.
Yep.
A living, breathing adult parental figure who can nurture you and educate you, and a supercomputer.
Yep.
That even if it can mimic empathy, cannot have empathy.
Yeah.
As an actual feeling. Like, I see that highlighted in the second test with the board of directors with Megan and Katie. Mm-hmm. And Megan says, how would you like to make a flower with a bunch of paper and a rubber band? And Katie just starts fucking sobbing, right? Just like immediately. And Megan's first thing is, Katie, what's wrong? Does your arm still hurt? She doesn't have, she couldn't possibly understand what's wrong with Katie. So she just goes back to the last thing that happened. Katie had an injury on her arm. That must be what's bothering her. And that's why she brings it up.
Yeah.
And then just asks for clarifying information. And when she finds out that, like, she's talking about her dead parents, Megan already has a response model for that, because she picked it up earlier when she first found out that Katie's parents had died.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But she has learned to project that as empathy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
It's nuts. It's all programming, but it's all also knowing that you have to put a cover on the program because you need to come across as human.
Yeah. You're thinking about from the AI's perspective.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm even thinking, I'm trying to give credit, like, where credit's due. I don't think that AI is trying to be vindictive or even, like, homicidal. I'm trying to think of all the different other ways that, like, 2001 A Space Odyssey and iRobot and some of these other, like, AI things. I don't think that they wanted to do harm or bad things. It all had to do with the programming that they were given.
Yeah.
I don't think that Megan would have been violent if humanity wasn't already violent.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if she's a supercomputer, she's learning everything from the internet's got a lot of violence on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I just find it interesting that, like, AI is portrayed as this very scary, very, like, intentionally bad thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's more happenstance than it is intention.
I think it is, too. If you try to make anything too human, you have to accept all of the human that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
And humanity isn't just subservient and full of knowledge and like companionship and that sort of thing. Humanity is also evil and gross and horrific at times.
True.
And we don't just display the positives. And it's when you try to make something mimic us as close as it can, some of those negatives are going to come in.
Absolutely. And and just at the baseline that, like, you cannot mimic humanity.
No.
You can't teach AI how to feel.
Yeah.
Like, how to actually feel those things, right? Yeah. It can only, like, look at it from a very analytical
Exactly. Point. Yeah. You can mimic it, but you can't experience it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
You can experience empathy and mm-hmm. those sort of things, but you can understand how they work.
Mm-hmm. And probably exploit them and pretend like you understand what they feel like and what it looks like. But you can never replicate that experience.
Yeah. No matter what, it's just a coat of paint on a metal thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Why don't we get into trivia?
Let's do it.
All right. So what's really interesting is that there's only 14 trivia results on IMDb.
Ooh.
Only 14.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. This film was originally rated R by the MPAA. While editing, it was evident that it could be a PG-13 rating by altering a few scenes and attract a larger audience. Due to the trailer's popularity among teens, some scenes were reshot to tone down the violence and obtain a PG-13 rating. So they purely did it just so that they could make more money, get more people to watch it.
Yeah, it could be a horror movie for the family.
Yeah, I'm not mad at.
No.
Writer Akella Cooper said the original body count was much higher, with the film being gorier. An unrated version released on the Peacock streaming service on February 24th, 2023. Amy Donald, who played Megan, is a 10-year-old national champion dancer and brown belt in karate who was discovered at a farm down the road, provided the full body moving shots, including all of the stunts and the dancing scenes for Megan. Director Gerard Johnstone said in an interview, the methodology was essentially to use an animatronic puppet when she's still, and as soon as she starts moving, she's a girl in a mask. And that it had only been possible because the incredible young actress had physical abilities he hadn't believed anyone would have, and was so completely dedicated she would work out how to do anything he asked of her. Donald received coaching from Lou Cocker, a movement coach used to working in prosthetics, and worked with a stunt team who she was amazed by not needing any wires or rigging to perform the superhuman feats in the movie. On set, Donald wore a static silicone Megan mask created by Marat FX, which was later animated with CGI for Megan to appear to be speaking.
Wow.
Isn't that fucking cool?
That is really cool. And just to, like, find some girl on a farm.
Yeah, she wasn't like a professional actress.
Yeah.
She was just somebody they just found who was really flexible and really, like, light on her feet, was willing to take direction, and just signed up for this movie.
And then she fucking killed it.
She fucking killed it. And I wonder if she comes back for Megan 2.0.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. It says the song Megan plays on the piano is Toy Soldiers, a 1988 hit for Martika. Actors dressed as Megan showed up to the Los Angeles Rams, Los Angeles Chargers NFL game on Sunday, January 1st, 2023, to promote the film. They performed a dance routine midfield during halftime.
Nice.
I saw quite a few flash mob dances for Megan, too, like at different events that year.
It is a brain worm, RFK. A brain worm of a dance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were several people that were doing it on TikTok after the movie came out. Lydia, the therapist, was originally killed by Megan during her rampage at Funky Toys, as she had upset Katie by making her cry during a therapy session. When the film was recut to PG-13, her death scene was removed from the final cut. Lydia's death was not put back in the movie's alternate R-rated cut either. I think it would have been cool to see Megan's kill list.
Yeah.
Because it almost kind of seemed like towards the end she was just, like, cleaning house.
Yeah,
kind of killing for the sake of killing. But it would have been kind of cool if, like, she only killed people who, like, injured Katie in any way.
Yeah, if it was only people who had targeted her impaired human.
Yes. Like, not even her specifically. Like, it would have been interesting. Like, because she didn't kill Tess and Cole, which was nice. She incapacitated them so that she could get out, right? Yeah. And you, they were kind of presumed dead until the end when, like, you found out that they weren't. But I think it would have been kind of cool if she let a purely just, like, anybody who crossed Katie were the ones that were on the kill list. And everybody else, she would find ways to just, like, wrap them up and leave them.
Yeah.
You know? Or, like, just knock them out unconscious and just, like... Yeah. But it seemed like she maybe... I just find it so interesting. I'm just thinking of, like, when she killed Kurt.
Mm-hmm.
She did it because she wanted to frame him for David's murder. But, like, who gives a shit? She's not going to prison.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
You don't need to frame murders on people. Like,
no. You.
You could literally kill the entire police force. Like, yeah, come on.
You robot.
You robot, bro.
You robot.
Even if you had to go to jail, you would outlive your sentence.
Yeah. All they're going to do is just turn you off.
Anyway, I just the plot hole podcast.
Love it.
One day.
You know, if we create a network, we got to have another one.
We got another one. The idea for the film began when James Wan's Atomic Monster Productions was brainstorming ideas and chose one about a killer doll. Although Wan produced the film Annabelle in 2014 is about a killer doll, he said, pretty much the concept is about embracing technology too much and relying too much on it, and what happens when technology runs amok. It's a commentary on the world we live in, and it feels relevant. Jason Blum stated that the film would have black comedy elements, which is one reason Gerard Johnstone was chosen to direct, saying, we needed someone who can do the thrills and set pieces, but who also has a cheeky approach. Wan admired Johnstone's film Housebound in 2014 because of his ability to balance the horror and comedy elements by creating a tone that is both frightening and humorous, and the sensibility was essential for Megan. Adrian Marotte and Kathy C. of Marotte Effects Studio created an animatronic puppet version of Megan that was used for dialogue and close-ups. There was also a second animatronic used for certain scenes, as well as a poseable stunt version of Megan that wasn't puppeteered. The animatronic Megan was puppeteered via a variety of techniques, which included radio-controlled facial expressions performed by Adrian and Kathy in tandem, automated lip sync for the dialogue, temp tracks were provided during filming by New Zealand actress Kimberly Crossman, and a puppeteer physically moving Megan's head and body. That's fucking crazy.
That is.
That's crazy. So they had like five different versions of Megan.
Yeah.
An animatronic puppet for close-ups, a stunt version, another puppet, and then Amy McDonald. So it's four.
So many Megans. Flock of Megans.
Allison Williams said, there's a certain unrated moment that makes her sick to her stomach. Williams said, the unrated version is a lot of fun, if you have the stomach for it. When asked if there is a specific scene that makes her squirm, she replied, oh my God, it should be when a child perishes. But at one point, someone's face loses a fight with a pressure washer and it starts to peel off. Even though I know how it works behind the scenes and I watch all the tests they did with the special effects makeup, I still get sick to my stomach when I see it. It just grosses me out. I don't do well with gore in general, so that moment is particularly gnarly for me.
Yeah.
Okay, on a budget of $12 million, principal photography began in June 2021, taking place in Los Angeles, California, and Auckland, New Zealand. The suburbs of Auckland were utilized to lend the film a Denver, Colorado feel. Why wouldn't you just fucking shoot it in Denver, Colorado?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. Filming was completed by mid-August, right before a COVID-19 lockdown occurred in New Zealand. The film underwent reshoots and post-production in order to secure a PG-13 rating from the Motion Picture Association after the original cut was deemed too violent. It would have been really funny if they did the reshoots in Denver, Colorado.
Right. Well, this is the vibe we were going for anyway, so.
The amount of money that cost you.
Yeah. Anyways. Seems a little excessive. Also, wanting it to have that vibe and that sort of thing, but you say in it that it's Seattle, and, well, Seattle's the main place.
Right.
And then where the parent situation happens is supposed to be in Oregon.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they were traveling there for like a ski trip or something.
Yeah.
Like that. Oh, my God. Oh, let's see. I got a couple more. While Gemma is going over the pitch presentation for Megan, she states that it uses an A17 bionic processor. This is a specific chip designed by Apple.
It is. Yeah. I only knew that one because I worked there.
Right. There was another one. I don't think it's in this trivia, but the polypropylene barrier.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Cole said, like, oh, I forgot to put the polypropylene barrier in there, is an actual thing. If you don't have that barrier in there, the computer parts heat up too fast and it blows up.
Yeah.
So what happened in the movie actually would happen if you didn't do that.
Yeah.
I
like that. I like the accuracy.
I know. In the trailer, M. Thregan tells Brandon, you should probably run. But in the feature itself, she says, this is the part where you run.
Ah, okay.
Screenwriter Akella Cooper cited the Richard Attenborough film Magic in 1978 and her innate fear of ventriloquist dummies as one of the chief influences on her screenplay. She is also a big fan of the Chucky franchise.
You can see that.
Obviously.
Yeah, that's pretty apparent.
Mm-hmm.
And ventriloquist dolls are fucking creepy.
They fucking are.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Ugh. All right. Finally, in a 2023 interview with Screen Rant, Gerard Johnstone detailed some of what went into the now famous dance scene. What was really funny is these movies are made on a very tight schedule. We had about 5 dance sequences and they were all great. This is really just the first one we could really do. And it's just been amazing to see how that was enough. Thank God I didn't change it. Thank God I didn't do something else, because it just felt like it was the perfect level of something that someone could do themselves at home, apart from the flip. But there's a point to the dance. It was always important that it wasn't a dance for dance's sake. She's doing it to distract the guy while she picks up the guillotine.
Yeah, but it was so cunty. It was so good.
It was so good. And it's like it's a callback to when she's playing with Katie and they're doing the dance. Like, it's just, it's perfect.
Such an iconic scene.
And you know, like, I'm just gonna say this because we were talking about experiences earlier, but like, they play this as Megan is having fun.
Yep.
She's having fun at this point.
She, yeah.
Enacting revenge, right? Yeah. Because if you think about it, if the objective is just to like turn the lights out,
she could have just done that.
Well, whenever she's choking Gemma, like, there's like a couple of times she's like choking Gem on the ground. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? You're made of titanium. You're not like slowly choking this bitch out.
Yeah.
Crush. Dead.
Right? Yeah.
You
got the torque, yeah, bitch. You know, like,
yeah. Right? Like, but yeah. So that's what I'm saying is, like, one, it was probably just production and directorial sake, like, we gotta have fun and mix it up and it needs to be exciting, right?
Yeah,
but then it's also
we need to have the tension like last for a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then it's also like, this bitch is having fun.
Yeah,
she's fucking having fun.
She's liking it.
Yeah, she's liking it. All right. Yeah. All right, let's get into our ratings.
All right, so for my weapon, I picked probably one of my favorite weapons that I've ever seen in a movie, to be honest. And I tried to look it up to see if there was a different name for this. They're called two things. It's either a paper cutter, which I feel like people could imagine scissors for that, mm-hmm. or something that isn't what I'm trying to reference. And so the second one is paper guillotine.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always heard it called that. I just didn't know if that was my family being problematic, because that's what they do. but it is online, on Amazon, sold as a paper guillotine. So I'm going to say that that's what it is.
Hell yeah.
So my murder weapon is the blade or the swinging arm of a paper guillotine. And for quality, I gave it a 5 out of 5. Honestly, like, if I take it being a horror movie out,
mm-hmm.
it was a really fucking well done movie.
It was.
It is hella entertaining. It is hella entertaining. It's technically one that the whole family can watch, like, for the most part.
Oh, yeah.
There's, like, all of those little elements that are added in where it's like, oh, you see Gemma's maternal instincts turn on. You see grief. You see old people not understanding how technology works. Like, you see all of these little pieces that are put in there that just build to this beautiful atmosphere and this really great story. So it was, to me, it's pretty perfect as far as quality goes. Scariness, I gave it a 1 out of 5. There are some like tense moments, mm-hmm. and there's some death. So to me, that at least gives it a 1. Otherwise, sure. I probably would have given it a 0.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's definitely threat.
Yeah.
There's definitely threat there.
Yeah. And then for rewatchability, I gave it a 5 out of 5. It's not very long. I think it's like 1 hour and 43 minutes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not super long, hella entertaining. So it doesn't seem like it even takes 1.5 hours.
Yes.
And I've already watched it multiple times.
right?
Yeah.
To the point, I've watched it so many times that like I sometimes can't remember the sequence of events.
Yeah.
I can just remember all of the moments, right? And just like not necessarily the order in which they happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it is one of those movies that if you want a good laugh, definitely worth putting it on. There's so many memorable parts. You don't even have to pay attention to it. It could be something you throw on in the background and you know what's going on.
And at the same time, when you do rewatch it, and even the more times you watch it, you start to notice little tiny subtleties like that you missed the first time. Like those little side glances that Megan gives Gemma sometimes, or like, you know, just some of the ways that like she answers different questions, or like just these little tiny pockets.
Yeah.
I like the evolution of Gemma's character in this. And honestly, like I kind of like Megan's evolution in it too.
I do too.
Cause she really like, she does kind of evolve throughout the film.
Yeah.
From when she first wakes up and starts her time in the movie.
It's good.
It's really good. It is. It's one of those movies that like, I remember sleeping on. Like I remember not watching it when it initially came out. I was like, that's not up my alley at all. Not interested. But when I did finally watch it, it is, it's very, very good. I would 1,000% recommend it to anybody that likes scary movies or doesn't, because, well, I'll get into my rating now.
Yeah.
Because you used the paper guillotine, which I respect, that was one of my weapons, because it's just obvious. So I'm going to do the pressure washer.
Hell yeah.
Because the pressure washer is the second
weapon.
So I, for quality, I also gave it a 4. I'm going to give it a 4.5. out of 5, because I've watched this movie probably like 4 times in the last couple of days, all of those little tiny subtleties, like I really feel like this is a movie that there's no scene that's gratuitous.
Mm-hmm.
It has just enough. I really like the like all of the characters, none of them seem gratuitous. They all have their little part to play and their little string to pull, which I really like. So it's super entertaining. And it's also, I give it such a high rating because it's easily digestible and it's great to like see with a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Like I would love to show this movie to a teenager that really wants to get into horror movies.
Absolutely.
For scariness, I gave it a 1 out of 5. I found no part of this movie scary.
No.
Like unsettling would be the only word that I would give. And it would be for things that like most people, especially younger people, wouldn't find scary.
Yeah.
Like the reliance on tech or like AI taking over and like taking over humans, or this like blatant neglect of a child.
Yeah, the more adult concepts and the more existential pieces of it too
is the part that's scary, and the rest of it, like this movie is so entertaining. Like I just, you're gonna laugh through most of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any type of like horror base.
Yeah,
I feel like for just the common movie goer, this is probably going to take you for a ride, and it's going to be a really fun ride. And it's probably going to scare you at times, or it's going to make you want to look away.
Yeah.
But you will still have a good time while watching it. For rewatchability, I think I also gave it a 5 out of 5. It's just so good. It's a great fucking date movie. It's not a date movie that you're going to need to hold on to your date. It's one that you're both going to be laughing at the screen the whole time. Like I just really, really love all of the actors in it. Like Ronnie Chang was such a good addition to this movie. Like I'm thinking about so many good lines, but also just like Megan was super entertaining.
Yeah.
Like as a character, like not just as like the main kind of antagonist, but also as like this character.
And you know, this isn't something that I try to do often, but I would almost actually recommend this too. Like if you're going to watch it with a bunch of friends, mm-hmm. or if you're going to have a date night, like that sort of thing, this is actually a movie that would be a roll on the ground laugh riot after a few drinks.
Oh
like,
my gosh.
Have a couple beers and then sit down and watch it and you will be screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Pull this out at like your next just like friend movie night or your family movie night.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll have a really great time. Finally, let's do our what doing.
Oh yeah.
What doing?
I always put this in my book is what up.
What up? I kind of like that too. In just the last week.
Yeah, in just the last week, which is nice. I don't feel like I have to remember so much to catch up on.
Yeah.
So I went backpacking last weekend with Karina's husband, Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
And we had been trying to put this together for like a really long time. And so we've had to push it out. weather's not been in our favor, that sort of thing. And so this last weekend, we essentially decided, fuck it, we're doing it.
I know, because you wanted to postpone it again because you didn't want Harrison to have a bad experience.
I did. I was up until like Friday night. Mm-hmm. I was like, I really don't want this to be the trip that like turns him off to backpacking. I don't want, it's already backpacking inherently is just hard. Being miserable outside. Right. So I don't want it to be more miserable outside.
Right.
And so I did almost be like, hey, I'm going to lay this all out for you personally. I feel like we should move it because I want you to have a really good time, but I'm going to leave it up to you.
Mm-hmm.
I decided not to even do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, no, we're going to do it. If anything, experiencing what backpacking is like in bad weather is going to be the test of, is this something you love to do or is it something that is not for you?
And And I'll tell you, our first backpacking adventure, that's exactly what happened.
And
he had a fucking, he had the best time. So
yeah, I just decided, fuck it, we're just going to do it. And so we did. It was such a cool trip. Getting to hang out with Harrison in general is always fun.
Dude, right?
But being able to share my like biggest passion with somebody who is curious about it and wants to do it too,
mm-hmm.
and seeing the drive for it like ignite, it was just so cool.
It kind of pays it forward,
right? It does. Yeah, it kind of pays it forward a little bit. And also, one of my biggest things with inspiring people or taking people on their first trips or even just seeing that passion start to begin with people is that that means that they're going to take care and respect the lands that we do this on.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one thing for like shitty Instagram hikers to go up somewhere, leave their trash everywhere and all that kind of stuff because they're just in it for the picture.
Exactly.
For backpacking, it's a lot of fucking work. It's a lot of fucking money.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to really want it. And if you go out there and see those areas being mishandled or mistreated and seeing garbage everywhere and that sort of thing, it breaks your heart.
Yes.
Because you know the work that you're putting in just to experience this beautiful place. And you don't want to see that taken advantage of.
Mm-mm.
So to me, there's that extra level of like, you're going to become a steward of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people don't see what we see.
Yeah.
And it was just cool to see that. And it was awesome that it decided not to start raining until we got the tents set up.
Aww.
Like it was within 10 minutes of us setting up the tents, it started raining.
Oh my God.
And so we got to hang out for a minute at camp. And then I was like, I'm just going to head into my tent to eat because it had started coming down.
Right.
I was like, I'm going to head into my tent to eat. It should be pretty sporadic, so I'll come back out. It never let up.
Oh.
So we ended up having to kind of stay in the tents, but it rained until we woke up the next morning. Then we woke up, it rained for a little bit, and then it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And it stopped long enough for us to pack up all of our stuff, mm-hmm. get going down the trail, and then it didn't start raining again until we were like almost at the car.
Oh, so thank goodness.
It was pretty perfect.
Oh, that's so great.
So yeah, it was just
like, holy shit.
It was really cool to see how excited about it he was and to hear him say that he had a good time and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was nice.
He definitely had a good time. I haven't gotten too many details from him because I don't really like to ask.
Yeah.
Like,
you want him to share when he wants to.
His experiences are his own. And like whatever he wants to share with me is his decision, not mine.
Yeah. It was just nice to have a little bit more of those bonding moments because we haven't really had very many of those.
Yeah, exactly. So. And when like you're out in the middle of nowhere, like all I've got is time to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And an environment that neither of us have gone to often.
Yeah.
Like the other side of the Cascades looks far different. So it was also not one of those times where I'm pointing out every plant and being like, oh, that's
look at that.
Oh,
yeah, because you didn't know.
Because I didn't know any mm-hmm. of it. All I knew was the magpie that I got super stoked about. aside from backpacking, I have been reading a lot.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So I don't think I had finished it last time. It in my probably top five favorite books, if not top three. So it's up there with The Shining.
Hell yeah.
Awesome. Absolutely amazing book.
Mm-hmm.
I've never in my life thought that I would say that every page of a nearly 1200 page book needed to be there.
Is necessary.
And it did.
Right.
Every one of them. Amazing. Now I'm currently reading Child of God by Cormac McCarthy.
I haven't heard of that one.
Cormac McCarthy wrote the novels that the movie The Road is based on, and the movie No Country for Old Men is based on.
Okay.
His writing style is really unique. He doesn't believe in punctuation aside from like periods.
Got it.
He doesn't use a ton of like commas or quotations, that sort of stuff, because he doesn't like the way they look on the page. Huh. That's ultimately the reason he doesn't like it.
Interesting.
His prose is also really complicated in the way that he uses a lot of antiquated verbiage and really long run-on sentences, where you have to approach it with like a lyrical mindset and kind of take it in like stances.
Right.
It's difficult to read for sure. So this is the third book that I've read by him, and it's been really good so far. He's really good at painting a story as you're going while not being verbose at all. Like, there's run-on sentences and that sort of thing, but there's not an over amount of detail, anything like that. It's just what you need to be able to paint the picture, and then it's done.
Okay. Yeah. So it doesn't go into as much detail as, like, King does.
No.
It's just, like, just super long-winded.
Yeah. I'll bring this one to you when I'm done with it, because it's only, like, 180 pages, too.
Oh,
it's super short.
I can get through that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been trying to read more. I'm not very great at it.
Yeah. Why be good at reading when you could be good at watching?
Yeah, I'm really good at watching.
Yeah.
And playing.
I'm not.
Yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to bring up?
No, I think that's it.
So what I've been doing, I've been playing a lot of video games. I've been playing a lot of, my cousin Colin and Emilio. Colin lives in New York and Emilio lives down in Southern California. I've been playing Faz with them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's like almost every day. Like Colin is 3 hours ahead of us. So he'll text us, our little group chat. He'll be like, hey, I'm going to hop on to Faz. Like if anyone wants to do the weekly challenge or whatever. So I've probably played with them. Oh God, it's probably been like 4 or 5 times in the last week.
Sick.
Which has been really fun. Just jumping in. Sometimes Harrison joins, sometimes Zach joins. I don't know if you've joined in this last week with us, but
not in the last week, I don't think.
But you have joined us a couple times while we've played.
Colin's a hoot.
Yeah. He's cool. I love both of them. They're both just so great. I love playing Faz with them. I can like when I play Faz with them, the training wheels are off.
Yeah.
And I like don't fear the ghost. I could just have a really good time. I'm like constantly learning new things because the both of them just like know where everything is.
Yeah.
Right. Or are willing to just be like, hey, Karina, go over there for a second. hey, go over there and grab that for me.
Yeah.
So I've been playing a lot of Faz. Harrison and I are also back in on Valheim. So we took a bit of a hiatus. We just kind of got burnt out on it. And we jumped back in and we've really been enjoying it. I've been learning a new damage type because we just discovered magic.
Oh, okay.
It's called Eiter in Valheim. So I'm trying to learn how to use it. It's been a learning curve because like I had to get like a new weapon and armor type. So I'm a lot squishier, but I can do more damage. So it's like more of a glass cannon, like kind of have to figure out. And so our tactics in battle are a bit different.
Oh, okay.
Where I let Harrison take a lot of the melee and I stand back and try and like give range support and things like that. So it's been a lot of fun. Like anytime you want to come and jump in with us.
Yeah.
We want to show you our bases because we have a couple of them. And then the last thing I was going to bring up that I've been doing a lot of. But we did once on the 21st, we went rock climbing.
Oh my God. Yeah. I meant to bring that up too.
Yeah. You went with part of our rock climbing crew. So I typically go with Zach and Eve and our friend Elliot. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just those three, right? That time that you had gone with us. So that was a lot of fun. We went to the Beaverton Portland Rock Gym. And I think Elliot and Eve did some lead climbing, but we just mostly did top rope and stuff. I wanted to mainly kind of stick with you
because
it was your first time kind of going and getting on top rope. But I was super proud of how high you got.
I now feel like I could have gotten a lot higher, but it finally broke the fear that I have of top rope because I had only ever experienced auto belays doing top rope.
Yeah.
And if you let go, some of them are very slow. Mm-hmm. Some of them are pretty fast. And I still get the feeling of I'm falling.
Absolutely.
But going with you and having somebody to actually belay me,
mm-hmm.
being able to actually like stop for a second and not fall, I was like, oh shit, this is way safer than bouldering.
Oh, absolutely.
And I got up to the top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I know when I go into it again, I'm going to be like, no, I got it.
You're just like, I got it. I can get all the way to the top.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I think you're really going to like it. When you were talking earlier about like indoctrinating people into backpacking, I was like, that's kind of how Eve and I are with rock climbing. Like, we fucking love bringing people into rock climbing. We're like, yes, come into our club. Yes.
Yeah.
And we started with Pavel. We started with Eve's preceptor when they were training to be a paramedic, and Pavel was their mentor. And then Pavel started coming with us. Like, once a week he'd come top roping with us, and he got really into it. He took like the beginner class, and then he got Stevie into it. And then I think at this point, and then Eve got their now fiance Zach into it. And like, now we've just slowly started pulling in all of these EMT people. I'm getting Harrison into it. I'm getting you into it. Ooh, we're just building this little cult, and I love it. And then I've been climbing, like, I think I've gone like, again, like 3 or 4 times in the last week. Mm-hmm. I either go by myself and I just get lap practice in, or I've been getting extra lead time with Eve. Or like yesterday I went with Eve and Zach and I think Stevie.
Oh, so cool.
It was just the 4 of us just going out and doing stuff. So
yeah.
I think right now it's just Elliot, Eve, and I that are lead climbing.
Okay. So
everybody else top ropes.
I do want to be able to belay at some point. So I want to take that class.
You can either take the class or... I can teach you.
Oh, okay.
I was an instructor, so like I can teach you and how to pass the test.
Yeah.
And then they just test you in the like waiting area.
Oh, okay.
They just want to know that you know how a Grigor works.
Yeah.
And how to operate it, and how to like lower your belayer, how to catch a fall if they end up falling, things like that. And they just want to make sure that you know how to tie into the rope.
Oh, okay.
That's literally it.
Okay.
You don't need to take a 45-minute class to do that. I can teach you how to do that, and then you could just go take the
test. Oh, sick.
I can even test you a couple of times. Are you ready?
Sick. Okay. Yeah, I definitely want to do that.
There was one day I went for, I think, a birthday party, and we went, Brian took me, and we went with a couple of other friends, and they had me take the test in order to go there because I wanted to top rope. And when I was taking the test, I was essentially giving an instruction lesson to everybody who came with me.
I love it. Yeah, it's that was actually one thing I was talking to Harrison about while we were out backpacking.
Really?
I was like, it's so fucking cool to see Karina doing the thing that is like, that is her element. I was like, that is seeing a whole nother side of her where you can see her so dialed into that and doing the thing that is obviously her shit. It was so cool to watch that.
That's so cool.
It was so cool. Like, you could see everybody having a good time with it. And even looking around at people who weren't in our group, you could see them really enjoying the time that they were getting on the wall.
Yes.
But when I watch you do it, it's like you look at it through a different lens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool. It was really cool to see it.
I love rock climbing.
Yeah.
It's definitely like every time I'm like doing something and I'm like idle, I'm like, man, I want to be rock climbing. Like, even when like I go home and like today I'm fucking sore, like my hips and like my hands. I got to tell you, I did a 10 yesterday where I like wedged my hand into a hold, and I had to do that several times. And I didn't notice until today when I was washing a dog that like the back of my hand is bruised.
Oh shit.
And like has a scrape on it from shoving it into this hold. But like, I had so much fucking fun. Like, I remember when I came down and like Eve and I were flaking the rope back in, and we both saw blood on it, and we're like, whose blood is that? Doesn't matter.
I also got to see, and Eve made me really understand how special it is to watch this.
Yeah.
I got to see a challenging route and got to watch you, Zach, Eve, and Elliot do it.
Right.
And seeing the way that everybody's brains worked differently to do that same thing or to reach the same goal.
Yes.
Was really cool for me because I think I had approached rock climbing a few times with the perspective of like, oh, there's a right way and a wrong way to do this.
Got it.
And now I'm learning that the right way and the wrong way, the only wrong way is if it's putting you in more danger.
Exactly.
The right way is to just get to the top.
Exactly.
Whatever that
method that takes. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. As long as you use the holds that are provided or the rules, right? Because like if we're thinking about that yellow route,
yeah,
it had the arete on, which other routes might not have on if it's like a harder grade, but it's specifically, that's like an extra rule. So, but other than that, you are correct. Yeah. Like there's no, you don't have to do it a certain way. You will find like as you get harder into rock climbing that like I was watching even Zach do this. It's a 512 yesterday and it has so few holds on it that like the route setter who set that route wanted you to do it in a very particular manner. They wanted you to like put this hip here or use that as like a left foot hold rather than a right foot hold. But yeah. Like it really is up to you how you do it.
Yeah.
I have also watched really good climbers climb the same route and they do it completely differently.
I love that a route setter would do that too, because that's forcing you to think about using your body in a different way.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's kind of cool too. Like as you get more into rock climbing, you'll start to notice, I do it, but you'll start to notice climbers when they're on the ground and they've been doing it for a minute, they'll like observe a route beforehand and they can almost anticipate what the movements are going to look like while they're just looking at it. Like just looking at like the spaces in between big holds or what the holds look like. Is it like a pinch? Is it like a sloper? Is it like this big jug hold, right? They're looking at them to like analyze how difficult is this route going to be? I know what the grade says on it, but what do the holds say while I'm looking at it?
Yeah.
And then even further when I've been, because now we're lead climbing. So instead of top rope, we're like the rope is at the top of the route and you're attached to one end and your belayer is attached to the other. And as you're climbing, the belayer is bringing in the slack. In lead climbing, you're both on the ground, the rope's on the ground. And as you're climbing, you're clipping yourself into the wall as you go.
Yeah.
So while I'm on the ground and I'm analyzing a route, I'm looking at the holds and I'm like, okay, how hard is this route going to be? And then when I look at it again, I'm like, okay, where are all the points that I have to clip in at? Because those are going to be points that like, I want to know, is that a good handhold? Is that a shitty handhold? Yeah. Am I going to have to move my body in a particular position to be safe?
Yeah. Is it the ones where you set those points yourself? Is that trad climbing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So sport, because there's also sport climbing. And sport climbing is when you're outs, at least to my knowledge, is when you're outside and the gear is already there.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still outside, so you're like you're still having to clip yourself into the rope, but you're not having to like place the gear into the rock. If you're taking gear and you're putting it between two boulders that are slightly ajar from each other and you're just sticking pro in there, that's trad climbing.
Okay.
Which is like how mountaineers climbed. Well, back in like the 60s and 70s, they only had a couple of different types of pieces of gear.
Yeah.
Now in the 21st century, we have very, very expensive high-tech gear.
Yeah.
Like one day we'll show, do you know what a triple cam looks like?
Is that what they use to span the gap in the descent?
Yes.
I want to see one of those in real life.
And
it just
grips. Yeah. And those are nice. They're heavy, though. So we learned how to use those in Trad 3. The ones that I really liked using are just called nuts. Mm-hmm. And it's literally just like a metal surface. It's kind of like in the shape of like a oblong D.
Okay.
And so it has one flat edge and then it kind of like tapers. And you just kind of stick those into a rock and kind of twist them. And they just kind of like sit in there.
Okay.
And I like those, like they're less sturdy than a cam, but they're less weight. And then they're easier to put in.
Oh, okay.
You're not having to like stick your fingers into something and push it down and then like try and get it into this space. And you know, you're like already fighting with your rope and everything. You can just take the nut and just like put it in, twist it, and it like almost locks into place. And then you just.
Oh, just, okay.
Click your rope in there.
Okay.
But I haven't really done that. I've done trad outside for class.
Okay.
Where we really weren't like climbing a mountain from the bottom to the top. We were just kind of doing it on a student wall because mm-hmm. we were doing both learning how to place pro and climb up it. But we had already had a lot of climbing knowledge. So it was basically just like how to place the pro, how to clip yourself in, but then also how do we build anchors?
Okay.
How do we build anchors off of fixed points? How do you build anchors off like a rock and a tree? And like, how would you equalize that? Like,
it makes sense for me to really get into this and learn as much as I can, because one of my goals is to eventually get into alpinism.
Ah.
And I feel like backpacking plus climbing equals alpinism.
Yes, it does.
So
yes. All the knots.
Yeah.
The ability, like, to be able to rappel.
Yep.
And to be able to, like, build an anchor.
Yep.
To rappel. And also the ability of, like, if somebody were in trouble and you needed to climb up to them or down to them, like, both of those skills are going to be important to have. Because, you know, if you, like, needed to climb up to somebody and you needed to get up there fast, you wouldn't climb it. You would just ascend the rope.
Yeah.
You would just take, and I can teach you how to do that, too. Where Sick. You just literally, like, we learned how to do that in self-rescue and in, like, our instructor courses, which was just learning how to, like, oh, you need help? Okay, well, I can literally just come up there. I can just take because I'm still attached into the system, I can just take the belay device and, like, slowly shimmy myself up the rope to you and help you.
Okay.
And then I can lower us both down.
Sick. Oh, I can't wait to learn more. That was cool. And shout out to Zach, Evie, and Elliot, too, for making that a very welcoming and accessible time.
Yes.
Nobody tried to pressure me into doing any specific thing. Everybody mm-hmm. let me just kind of go at my own pace, do what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then showed me also, when I'm not climbing, how to appreciate what I'm watching.
Yes.
Which was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like the little tribe that I've created.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun. And I'm very, very glad that you came with us.
Yeah.
We definitely need to plan more.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in the group chat now, so I'll know when it's happening.
Exactly, right? Yeah. I appreciate it when you texted me the other day. I was like, oh, good. He's still getting the text messages.
Oh, yes.
All right, bro. Let's go ahead and end this so that we can schedule these things and get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Hey, everybody. It's Karina. I'd like to tell you of a couple of announcements. We have got a Patreon now. You can subscribe at patreon.com/ It's Always Spooky. For $5 a month, we will be having some very special features, so stay tuned for those. Starting with every week, we'll be posting what episode we're planning on doing. So please make sure that you post your scariest and your favorite scenes so that we can feature them in the episode. If Patreon isn't your speed, you can also send us a tip on our Ko-fi account. That's ko-fi.com/ It's Always Spooky. Please, please, please also email us your spooky stories and any recommendations to itsalwaysspookypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much. It's always spooky.